Hey, everybody. This is Billy West. You've heard me on Futurama and Ren and Stimpy. You idiot! You fool!
Oh, stop it, Ren.
You know, Futurama, I did a bunch of voices. Greetings from the year 3000. It still sucks.
Oh, I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
She's a beautiful ship, all right? I'm going to fly her brains out, dear. And you're listening, because I'm Zoidberg, you have to listen to me. You're listening to two dads in a podcast. Scuttling away now.
Welcome to Two Dads and a Podcast.
Welcome.
Podcast.
The podcast.
Motherfuckers. Now, so this week we have a guest, right? And he is like, I don't know if he's a real human being.
No, what kind of name is Billy West?
Be a robot, because...
like, such a fake name.
He's... the noises that come out of his mouth, just from incredible. One to the other, is insanity.
It really is. And he changes characters flawlessly. And, you know, you heard it in the bump. That was back to back. There was no pausing. No editing.
The two of us sitting there shocked. Like
this really just happened.
It's super
cool. Our guest this week, Billy West, a legendary voice actor, honestly. He's been so influential for so much. He's been in so many things. He was characters you didn't even realize he was.
It's just hard to believe.
Yeah.
So without further ado, let's hear it from the guy himself.
Here you are, everybody. Billy West. Roll it. Billy.
Hey there.
Hello, hello.
How's it going, man?
Hey.
Thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure.
So I guess we'll jump straight into a few questions, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
So I know you got your start in radio, sort of. You were doing the music thing for a while. You kind of had a few things going on. When did you sort of know that voice acting was going to be the thing?
I wasn't convinced until quite a few years in radio. I mean, I was busy working in Boston and I was doing creative stuff and writing my own bits. It was an FM station, so they
were
very creative as compared to other places. But the program director appreciated talent. He respected it and he let us kind of do whatever we thought up, you know, and it was smart of him to do that because we got attention for that reason. Station got a lot more attention because me and my partner in production, Tom Sandman, we were running around wild with all these ideas and we weren't afraid to do them, you know.
that's how you get ahead, you know. You try something new and see if it sticks, right?
So yes, if you're a myopic, niggling little program director, anything out of your control, anything you didn't plan to happen, you know.
I mean, did you have that goal though, or was it just kind of whatever ended up sticking was going to be the plan?
I didn't have an ultimate plan. I mean, I just knew that I had done my time in radio by 1995.
Yeah.
I was working on the Howard Stern show and it was 1995 and I said, you know what, this is as far as I'm going is this business. No, Howard was an anomaly. He was a mega success. That's not in the cards for a whole lot of radio people, including me. It wasn't my show, you know?
Right.
And I had to go and, build my own franchise or whatever you want to call it. So I moved from New York in 95 to do auditions and, you know, cartoon auditions and commercials.
So when you got into the voice acting, was there a point in time that you kind of started realizing that you were a name that was recognizable, that people knew who you were?
That was because I was... Well, it's so funny. I got a lot of work from being on the Howard Stern show because being on that show was kind of an electronic business card right to Madison Avenue.
Right. You know,
where we were. But I mean, Madison Avenue, the industry, All these guys sitting in their cubicles in the morning listening to Howard, you know, and they'd get a load of me and they'd say, let's get this guy. We got to have this guy come in and audition for something. So that's kind of what happened. You know, but in 95, I did move to California, and I had no jobs lined up, nothing. I just let the wind blow me around, you know, no particular plan.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had faith in what I was able to do. And, you know, as soon as I hit the audition trails and everything, I poured it on. And I always wanted to leave people with like 1,000% more than they ever expected. You know, that was always my goal.
Yeah, so go above and beyond.
Going back to the music thing, what sort of music were you into and what sort of music are you into right now?
I played everything. I played trumpet when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I was in a school orchestra.
Yeah.
Grades. The trumpet thing, you know, I get tired of it real fast because there's only one dimension. You can only play melodies. And I love the sound of chords and the richness of them and the strangeness and the beauty and everything else that goes with those things that can create ambience and, you know, evoke a feeling in people.
Yeah.
There's very few trumpeters that can just like let it wail and move you to an extent.
Right.
But I was never going to be able to do that. It just wasn't, you know when something's working for you, and I didn't quite do it for me. Same with art. I used to draw when I started out, you know, when I was a kid, I used to draw all the time, but I only got so good and it was frustrating. And so when the idea of playing an instrument came along, that was a whole other thing. And then shortly after that, I got a guitar on a Christmas. My mom got me a very marginal acoustic guitar,
right?
Piano wire strings on it. You know, who knows? You're supposed to put your fingers on these things and say, "Hey, look at the Beatles. You know, they can do it. What's the matter with you?" You know, and I would just sit there and go, "Why wasn't I blessed with the kinds of the strength or the bones or whatever the magic is that takes to make these things move?" It was called getting another gauge of string.
Right.
Nobody would tell you. There was no, you know, mania for groups and stuff like that. It only extended to the point where somebody could become, you know, famous to the point where girls would scream for them. But when the Beatles came along, it just changed everything. You know, you didn't care what kind of guitar Joey D and the Starlighters guitar player played.
Right.
No one ever cared about that. Or Tommy James, they didn't care what kind of guitar the lead player played. But it was the Beatles. It was like, what are these things for real?
Yeah.
How come they can make that sound? How come these guys can do this stuff? You know, I was just loaded with intellectual curiosity and musical curiosity. So getting that guitar, you know, I had to tune it my own special way because I didn't even know how to tune a guitar.
Right.
But I put a tuning on it that made sense to me, and I was able to play the one chord, the four chord, and the five chord, which is the basis of all pop songs.
Pretty much all you need.
Yeah, I could play just about anything, but it wasn't right. It was, but it did have a particular sound, and I went back to it one time many years later because I used to love this song by Donovan called Mellow Yellow. And my guitar in this tuning sounded exactly like the guitar on that old single. And I said, geez, I wonder if that guy did that. You know, I mean, you find out that people break the rules. It's like, yeah, learn the form inside and out, and then you can F with it. You know, it's like Jeff Beck. I mean, what he plays, he knows 12 bar blues inside and out.
Right.
But then he allowed himself the freedom to F with the form.
Well, Frank Zappa comes to mind.
Rules,
for sure.
All of them. Rule breakers. I always felt like that was what I wanted to do with my voice, is kind of be a rule breaker. You know, just choose weird things that's like, why did you do that? You know, and I found out that gave the character more depth and more interest. when people are wondering not just what they saw and what they heard, but why? Why did you do that? You know, and you can explain backstories later when you become famous enough to get interviewed.
Right.
I'd be glad to tell you where that came from. You know, what was going on in my screwed up mind that day.
So with your voice acting, do you actually like the sound of your own voice when they play it back to you?
Yes, with characters, but I'm uncomfortable. I was always uncomfortable with the sound of my own voice.
We've heard that a few times. We've heard that a few times. So,
oh yeah.
If you had to be stuck in one voice that isn't your own, who would you pick?
Philip J. Fry doesn't count either, because
he's stuck with. Well, that was me. Yeah, when I was 25. I played in bands, you know, guitar, and there were no roadies back then. I'm talking about the late 60s. Groups didn't have roadies. There was sound systems were always messed up, and my guitar, you know, I broke strings easily because I played hard. I played out of control.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh man, I broke a string. Damn. What am I going to do now? I was always whiny and complainy, you know? And so I said, when they gave me the character to do, I said, that's exactly what I'm going to do with it. I mean, it's very hard for someone else also to steal what your real voice sounded like at 25.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reference. There's no A, B. You wouldn't know where to begin.
So if you got stuck in a voice, which one would it be?
Oh, God, I don't know. I guess I'm happy to be where I am.
That's fair enough. That is fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I better arrive on something. You know, I'm 9 years old now. So I better figure it out.
So our podcast is mainly about nerdy stuff when we're not talking to cool people like yourself. And you are
another nerd, brother.
Yeah, you're a comic book nerd. Yeah. What type of stuff were you into?
Let's see. Maybe I could light it up in here a little bit. And let's see. I'm into Brian Wilson. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, yeah. Beatles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brian Wilson. He mentioned me in his book because I played with him once.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I played lead guitar in his band for a bunch of shows, you know, like, and we did David Letterman. And that was the honor of my life. He was my absolute musical hero.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, a lot of figures from, you know, different cartoons and stuff like that. But when I was a kid, there's a couple of things that blew my mind. One of them was this. I don't know if you can see that or not.
Yeah.
You can see
it? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's called the supercar. And it used to be a TV show in 1960. And when I first saw that on TV, it blew my mind. You know, it just totally, it was a puppet show. And it just flipped me out. All I did was think about it and how to draw it. And, you know, I used to get obsessed with stuff like that because it took me away from a not so pleasant world. There's something else that stuck with me from childhood. Let's take a walk through the jail cell here.
Sure.
For sure.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is the, like from 1960, also H.G. Wells, The Time Machine movie.
Right.
This is a scale model of the time machine, and it works. It won't let you travel through time.
Oh, that is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is the stuff that shaped my entire life, you know, and so I had to, when they were available, I had to go back and grab them just to remind me where I came from.
Yeah, I don't blame you. We got quite a bit collections going on ourselves.
I don't know if you can see behind me, but I've got shelves of collectibles and statues and all kinds of stuff. So,
you know what the beauty of today is you can live in any year you feel like.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's so much cult and culture that you've collected or that you've been surrounded with. You could literally bury yourself in a particular year or a period of years and never come back.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what kind of stuff do you geek out about now? Of course, you know, you have your childhood favorites and your growing up favorites, but what do you geek out about now?
I'm trying to think. My taste in music, I was so versed about different types of music like jazz. I listened to jazz incessantly. I was a rocker, played rock and roll music. I've been very, very lucky. I've met my idols in life, or either that or worked with them. How's that?
Even better.
Yeah.
Les Paul. Got to spend a moment or two with him. Wow. There was a jazz guitarist named George Van Epps. I saw him locally out here, and he's no longer with us, but he pioneered something called the 7-string guitar. And he wasn't like a pioneer of grunge because he had 7 strings, which the grunge guys kind of favored. But no, he was a jazz player, and he was an innovator. And geez, you got me, you're pulling all this music stuff out of me. I don't know if it's boring or not, but
no, we're both really big. I mean, he plays guitar. I play the drums. You know, every once in a while we'll play some stuff together, but we're both big music nerds. So
there's nothing like it. There's nothing like playing with other players.
It's universal. You know, it doesn't matter what language you speak. You can relate through music.
Even if you're not on stage, or there's nobody else watching you, or if you're in a club and the club is packed with people and you're playing, there's just no feeling like that. I express myself pretty well. As a matter of fact, that's what led me to the end of the rock and roll business. They took away my spandex license in 1978. So I got into radio. That's when I left the band business. And I was pulled in the direction of doing voices. And they had to have things to say. You can't just have disembodied voices on the radio. You got to build characters and give them a life of some kind. So I was writing my own version of what I thought comedy was. And it turned out that, it was different. And it was original. And, you know, and it led me to all these great people that I wound up with in life. Let's see, what geeks me out? I don't know. You know something? It's like you get to the point where you feel like you've heard everything and there's nothing left to hear. I can't get with the top 40s or the playlists of today, because to me, and I know I sound like an old whiff of gas, but it's all repeating over and over. Wash what I do, you know.
I probably haven't listened to the radio in 15 years. Top 40s are overrated. You just gotta find what speaks to you.
Definitely.
I have great appreciation for contemporary modern artists. I have, you know, a few that I kind of keep an eye on. I don't know if this sounds stupid or not, but I found Lady Gaga very fascinating. She knows it's frightening what she knows. And the thing is it's frightening that people don't even realize that about her. Mysteries like that. She's like a mystery novel. One of my music heroes growing up was a woman named Laura Nero. You'd probably know her work better through other artists than her, like the Fifth Dimension, the Wedding Bell Blues, and Going Down to the Grapevine, Drink My Dad's Wine, all that. This woman, Laura Nero, wrote that stuff. And she had a big musical impact on me, the chords and everything. Plus her singing. There's not one song of hers that I can listen to and I start like wistfully filling up. She had so much soul. And you know, I'm very lucky that I lived in the time that I did. I got to meet Jeff Beck, you know, backstage in Long Island on the, I think it was Jones Beach. And, he knew who I was. I was like, I almost had a heart attack. I followed his scene and there he is. And Max Weinberg, you know, of course, from the E Street Band, but he was also Conan's musical director. And I was on Conan O'Brien one night, and Max was on there, and we got a little acquainted. And then I find myself walking through this tunnel to try to get backstage at Jones Beach, and I run into Max, and he goes, "Hey, Billy, what are you doing?" And I go, I'm trying to just go say hi to Jeff Beck. I don't know how that's going to work out or not. He said, I was just with him. Come on, I'll bring you back there. And it's like my knees were knocking. I didn't know what to do. I was tongue-tied for the first time in my life. I was like, maestro. You know, I could barely.
So you draw from so many inspirations, especially in your character work when you're developing your voices.
Yes. And
a lot of what you pull from, people, kids nowadays probably have no idea of the references, but it still elicits a joyful response from them. Do you get a kick out of stuff like that?
Yeah, I did, because it means that they were just like me.
Right.
Something that held such sway over me, the stupidest things in the world, had me in their thrall, in their clutches, you know, like Three Stooges. I stopped going to church when I discovered the Three Stooges, you know. I found my saints. but I mean, the noises that would come out of that type of comedy and everything, and you know, and I used to sit there and go, why are these guys doing this stuff? This is so crazy, it's so beyond. But I'm attracted to it.
Yeah.
Nonsense for nonsense sake. And it was fake violence. That's what I really, you know, because guys grew up watching the Stooges and Westerns and all the other stuff the TV had. If you got in a real fight with somebody, you'd be like disappointed because you didn't hear sound when you punched them.
Are you trying to tell me that I can't learn karate by watching movies?
But that's more silent. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like, you know, the sound effects. They went heavy on the sound effects, especially the faces. But I mean, if you're growing up and then you get in that position where somebody's bugging you and you want to slap his face, you don't hear that moaness, you know?
Right. You don't get the satisfaction.
Quiet, you idiots.
One of our Patreon subscribers, known as Hellhound, he wanted to know, what do you do if you get sick after you get cast for a role?
What do you do?
Yeah, like what's the process? Like, you get cast for a specific character and then you happen to get a sore throat or something.
Well, you know what? When I was a kid, I could do voices and noises, and I would Tourette out stuff and just free associate and everything. But I had serious throat problems. I always had a strep throat pharyngitis.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a place called the pharynx in there somewhere. There's all kinds of junk hiding down in the basement, you know, waiting to get you. Especially because streptococcus, if you ever get a hold of it and you get it near another wound or something, your skin just starts dissolving. Eating diseases. It's another form of strep. And but I mean, I used to get all this junk and I used to carry around a jar of hot water as long as it would, you know, because that would get my voice back. I was always losing my voice too. Let's see. I mean, I chronic problems, but I was not going to let it stop me. I just galvanized myself. I said, this is effing nothing. Okay. So what? It hurts to swallow. So what? I'm having fun.
Right.
Pulling stuff out of nowhere and exploring it, if for no other reason, my own amusement. But you know, I've gotten sick where you were in the middle of a gig, a run of a gig and everything. And there's been times when I couldn't even really talk, but there are voice people that will tell you that if you've blown out the first place that you go to achieve your work and that doesn't work, there's another place you can go. There's like another place that you can
deeper.
Get the words out, or another part of your throat, you know, you know, that doesn't hurt or doesn't falter like your normal one would. It's just like running to different rooms in a house. You know, one room's on fire, so you shoot down to the basement, you know, and I'll be okay down here. And that heats up. And then, but there is a third place. It's very hard to explain, but it comes from like weird places in your throat that you approximate the kinds of sounds that people are used to hearing from you. I did one season of Futurama with like a busted vocal cord.
Oh wow!
It was strained and it like what do you call it? It retreated into itself. In other words, it didn't hang anywhere where it could vibrate. Mm. It was after I had like, I think I had pneumonia or something, and this stupid vocal cord wouldn't come down, and there was nothing for it to rub up against. And so I found, to my peril, I go to the recording session, and it's like, you send something out and your mind already knows where it's going to land. It's not like a wild pitch. You know exactly, you're Roger Clemens. You know exactly how fast that ball is going to go and what its target is. But with this situation, you throw something out and you weren't sure where it was going to land. And it was so embarrassing. And I was sweating it. And I said to the guys, I said, listen, does this sound any good to you? And they said, yeah, what? You having a bad day? You know, they didn't notice much of anything. Well, yeah, I kind of am, but you know, and somebody just said, hey, you know, maybe you're, worst day is somebody else's best day.
Do you have any moments on the job, like when you were doing some voice work, that stick out as a crazy moment or a very silly moment?
Oh yeah. Well, somebody reminded me of that the other day, because we always had table reads on drama, you know, as if it were a real sitcom. You know, the actors get in this round table and Matt Groening is there and David Cohen and all these other great people that I work with. And, you know, I was good at jumping in and out of character. Like I didn't stumble. In other words, if there were six lines in a row that had all character voices that I did, I wouldn't stop and make an adjustment. I would just barrel through them. You know, somehow I was a freak. And I was able to do that. I mean, there's people that can do it, you know, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, there's like all my peers know how to do that stuff. So it's not like I'm saying, you know, I go into work miracles and then I leave, you know, it's not that. It's like they were so used to me being able to do that. And then one fateful day at a table read, it came time for me to voice a character's lines, and it was a certain character, but another character's lines came out of him and the room just went deathly silent. Silent, like, you know, I could feel the lights dimming and everybody's looking at me. Realized that happened. I said, this is how it starts, huh? God knows everybody. You know, that's how it begins. Bye, everybody. This is the long goodbye.
And that's how they came up with the episode where everybody switched bodies, right?
I would like to think that. No,
I started telling people that.
But I used to just say stuff at the table reads, and the writers were always there, and they were always tuned in to you because they've got to study you, and they've got to study your approach so that they can try to make it better. You know, and if you're bringing like new dynamics to something, they're all ears. And I came in one day and we all had our little name plaques where we sit. Oh, Billy West, right there. There's my little card and my little name. And I said, Billy West, what kind of a phony, fake, made up name is that? And the writers listened. And they put it in an episode. They're surprised. Hey, I'm Billy West. Billy West, what kind of a fake, phony, made-up name is that? Fry says.
That's great.
That's good.
Actually, we used to watch, when my son was a toddler, we'd watch Futurama, and then he started learning to talk as toddlers do, and we had to stop watching Futurama because you'd have this little three-year-old running back and forth yelling, "Bite my shiny metal ass."
As three-year-olds are wont to do as soon as they
yes.
They know what time it is.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Pick up on everything. if you don't mind doing a quick little bump for your episode.
Okay.
We'll have you introduce, if we can request, if you don't want to, that's fine.
I have to write it down.
But introduce yourself, characters that you do, and then if you wouldn't mind, as the voice of Zoidberg, say, you're listening to Two Dads and a Podcast.
Like all YouTube videos. Hey, guys.
Pretty much.
YouTube video. Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Okay. Hey, everybody. This is Billy West, and you've heard me on Futurama and Ren and Stimpy. You idiot! You fool! Oh, stop it, Ren. And then, you know, Futurama, I did a bunch of voices. Greetings from the year 3000. It still sucks. Oh, I don't want to live on this planet anymore. She's a beautiful ship, all right? I'm going to fly her brains out, dear. And you're listening, because I'm Zoidberg, you have to listen to me. You're listening to Two Dads and a Podcast. I'm scuttling away now.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. That took everything in me to not start laughing in the middle of that. That was fantastic.
I mean, I'm right there with you. I mean, stuff that makes me laugh is so relieving.
And you've jumped in and out of a few roles, and two that spring to mind is just like, for the age that we were at the time, you spoke for Shaggy in Scooby-Doo Zombie Island, I believe.
Yes.
And Bugs Bunny and Space Jam. And those have got to be two of the biggest movie of our childhoods.
Literally just watched Space Jam again, like 2 nights ago. I loaded it up. My son, he's three, you know, we were like, oh, hey, let's get it up and load it up. So I started looking up all the, you know, IMDb credits and behind the voice actors. And this guy emails me like immediately after I'm done watching the movie, like, hey, guess who we just heard back from? Wow. I'll let him finish up. But yeah, we literally just watched that movie the other day.
I appreciate that. But I enjoyed it. But like that experience, like all others, it's very surreal, especially when you find yourself doing work from somebody who was legendary. You know, in my mind, you will never convince me that stuff could have been done any better except by the guy that did it in the time he did it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was a hell of an actor. He could act on every one of those voices, and a genius, a total original. He was barely mimicking anyone if he did do a character. Sometimes they'd have a tinge of a, you know, gangster from the 30s, you know, that was famous back in the day. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. But he was the Mac Daddy, all right. And guys like Frank Welker remind me of Mel Blanc.
Oh, yeah. He's just in everything, it seems.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard, I'd imagine, to kind of stand up and try to put your own feet in those shoes and continue that legacy.
It's really hard. It really is hard. And plus, people somehow had access to me when I was recording. The studio door would open and somebody would pop their head in and go, "He's too Brooklyn." Thank you. Somebody else would pop by and go, "He's too cute. You got to toughen him up." Then some other nitwit comes by and says, "He sounds too Jewish." You know? And I was just like, yeah, shut up.
So I was curious. You don't have really like the acting pedigree, or you didn't come into it with the acting pedigree. A lot of people do. Did you have a natural ability for acting, or was it just sort of something that you developed?
Whenever I've done anything, like usually you're busy working at it before it truly exists in the form that everybody sees it in.
Yeah.
So like, what do I do? You're filled with questions. How do I deliver this line? How do I, I was directing a friend's online voiceover class the other day, judging, you know, people's, you know, their offerings of like audition type material.
Yeah.
And I would, listen, and I'd give them, I remember saying to one woman who was very promising, and she said, sometimes though, you're not quite sure what to do next. I said, you mean choices and stuff? Because you find out as soon as you go messing around with that stuff that there's a billion ways to deliver, hey, I'm going to the store.
Right.
You know, there truly is. And you got to pick the one that the directors are looking for, or you have to finesse it in such a way that you sold it to them and they said, let's do that. Let's try that. They believe in you. Because if it doesn't work, they take it out, you know. But I said to the girl, I said, just watch the movie. You know, you're speaking and you're telling the story. Just watch the movie in front of you as it unfolds, and you'll know exactly what to do, what that character should say, and how to say it.
That's very good advice.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah, it's simple, you know, kind of a pure way of doing it is just imagine that character reciting or acting out those lines and just watch them and you know, just do it what's on your paper. But, and it's also a strange thing to tell people that it's not about words, that it's about ideas. That's more for live acting. You know, like on camera acting where you got to memorize stuff. You got to fall in love with the ideas. And then the dialogue comes in. And whatever way you say the dialogue that sells those ideas is what they want. That's you being you, an artist. But there's so many ways to approach it. I mean, if you watch a TV, you know, if you watch TV on a regular night and you just saw like 50 different dramas or comedies and everything, there's that many ways of getting to that point. Some people got there via comedy stage. Some people got there, you know, via they were a sports figure and all of a sudden they're a comedian, you know.
Right.
There's RADA, Royal Dramatic Academy of Arts. There's Juilliard, you know. All these people came from different places to wind up in that one place. Well, it's a privilege talking to you, and you know, we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, we'll reach back out for at some point. You know, maybe when we're a little bigger. So
don't worry about that. None of it matters. Just telling
you right now. You know, you were saying,
I'm coming from your future to put my hand on your shoulder and say, you know, all that stuff you say is so important. It ain't.
Well, thank you so much, man.
Absolutely. You said earlier, you know, when you met somebody, you know, with Beck, and like it was surreal being able to do some of the things. You know, this has been a surreal experience for us being able to talk to you guys. So it's
good.
It's been a blast.
All right. Well, cheers and carry on and just be safe. Okay.
You as well. Thank you.
Enjoy. Thanks, guys.
There we have it. The one and only Billy West.
By the way, if you want to look up some Jeff Beck, Blow By Blow is the album to go. Constipated Duck is my favorite song, but Thelonious and Freeway Jam are also decent options. So there you go. A little
music tip for me. Tip from Felix today. Oh, man. Just as we've said with all of these interviews, it was just an absolute wonderful experience.
You cut out the part where I give him an out and he shuts it down.
So. I did. I had to, you know, I had to trim some things down so it fit our time length that we were shooting for. But
I felt that Catholic guilt having him on the line for like just 45 like, minutes.
And then he's like, what, you're too good to talk to me anymore?
As always, we've ended another segment successfully with another brilliant guest. So.
Yeah, but all right, guys, as always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to reach out to us for any comments, concerns, even, I don't know what you'd be concerned about. Maybe Felix's hat style.
Suggestions,
even.
I think a beanie's a solid, subtle choice, and I don't know about you.
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. As always, guys, you can also catch the YouTube interview series if you just want to watch the interview and listen to none of the podcasty stuff, which if you're listening to this and then going to YouTube, you've already listened to the podcasty stuff. So, we gotcha.
Now we changed the format, so now you can actually listen to just the interview only on the podcasty stuff. So that whole thing's moot anyways.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we'll still have the video for the interview series up, but now you'll actually be able to listen to the podcast on YouTube.
Specifically, is if you're listening to the podcast version of this, he actually takes you through a tour of his house.
Yes, you can see
the collectibles that he's talking about.
It was really cool. It was really cool him showing that stuff off. So
yeah,
thanks so much, guys. You can also email us at 2dap2020@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and hopefully you'll be back later. Have a wonderful day, guys.
We'll be here next week. We love you all, every single one of you. Hot steaming love pile, amalgamation of love, just the two of us
and Felix.
If we try,
just the two of us and Felix,
just all of us,
just all of us,
and you and you and I
and you and you and you.